and gentlemen, welcome to the latest episode, I believe episode 15, if I am correct, as I've been told, of the Dad Bod Squad Pod. Blake is as excited to be here as humanly possible.
Shut the fuck up, Jules.
All right. Are we ready? Are we ready for a roll call? Are we ready for everybody to start this thing off right in our very first movie review podcast?
Yay.
This is all overjoyed. The excitement in the room is palpable here.
It sure is. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have, of course, my tag team partner, the hostess with the mostest, the Mario 35 top 100 player himself, PJC.
Good evening. I have some things to say about this movie, but we'll get over that in the next hour or so here.
As do I. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this episode because I'm going to make a lot of people.
Not even letting me announce.
He didn't even introduce you, Blake.
I'm introducing myself. My name is Blake Cannon, and I'm the star of this fucking podcast. I'm not waiting my goddamn turn.
Beneath me. As always, coming to you live from your parents' basement, the most punchable face in Alberta independent wrestling, Blake Cannon.
I'm a heel, so that's a compliment. So thank you. And I ought to introduce myself. How about you introduce that
we just get tired simply looking at
Lee, stupid person that's beneath me on mine.
You mean our reigning, defending, undisputed provincial champion, the other man, the other two belt man in this podcast, and the only guy who is actually actively trying to be a moral compass on this show, T.Y. Jackson.
I am back. I haven't quit yet. I'm still trying to figure out that
he's
quit
quitting tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to be on this podcast, you can't be a moral compass.
Hey, you can try your best.
I'm sure he's quitting tonight.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's quitting tonight. And of course, if you guys are watching on my stream, he is in this direction right here. The return of one of the founders. We have not seen him since the first episode, and probably for good reason. Of course, the wild card JJ Spade is back with us tonight.
Thanks for having me. I'm just happy to be here.
What a baby face.
He's not happy. You can tell.
There's a reason why I don't already.
We're going to get 30 minutes into this and he'd be like, why the fuck did I do this?
Yeah.
Oh, me and microphones and charisma, we don't get along.
So Spade, are you happy that the Bills made it this far, or are you disappointed that they weren't able to take that one extra step?
No, I'm happy they made it this far. You know, it's the first time in 27 years they were this far in the playoffs, right? So,
yeah.
Got to take it the bright side of things, and they got a young team. They'll be back next year, right? So,
there we go.
That's what I said about the Flames in 2015, and look how that turned out.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So, before we go into more awkward silence, I believe we dedicated today's episode to reviewing Ready to Rumble, was it?
Ah, yes, the classic WCW film. It was released in 2000, so made in 99, and lacking a surprising number of WCW stars at the time.
I was reading a couple fun facts about this. Apparently, this movie was made with the intention of Eric Bischoff being the main villain in this movie.
Well, I have thoughts about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
you did research for this?
I actually did a research, did like a bit of a deep dive. Also, there was a planned sequel to this movie, but this movie ended up losing about $14 million, so that kind of put the kibosh on that. There was a few things that I read about this movie. Yeah, the main thing, Eric Bischoff was supposed to be the main villain, but he got fired during production of the movie.
I'm back, and better than ever.
And apparently the tone of the movie was supposed to be a lot more dramatic than what it ended up being.
Than what we ended up getting, because it's definitely not dramatic.
No, not at all.
So I have a question. So I should have asked this before we started, but how are we going to go about reviewing this? Are we going to review the story separately from the film, filming production, separately from, you know, the characters, or how are we going to do this?
I don't know. Like, I feel we could... Yeah, we could go kind of point by point of stuff that we made here, if any of us prepared notes.
I was writing down thoughts as I was watching. So my thoughts are...
unfiltered as the movie was happening in front of me.
So off the rip, I appreciated that that David Arquette's character was talking about, like, people like Bruno Sammartino, Freddie Blassie, Gorgeous George, George Steele, Jimmy Snuka, Andre the Giant, and Hulk Hogan, all great wrestlers. None of these people worked with fucking WCW except for Hulk Hogan. Like, this is a WCW movie. It should be putting over, like, Sting and Ric Flair and Lex Luger and this horseshit. Like, why are they putting over, like, people that don't exist in the universe of this movie? Like, that was the first thing that, like, pointed, like, that just stuck out to me.
Hey, oh, great. Boy. More dead
we
air.
We did it again.
More dead air. There we go. That's a solid start, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm watching my studio here, and I'm dropping frame rates real bad. I feel bad for anyone watching on my stream right now. I'm hoping it recovers.
Yeah, okay. So,
that opening is one of the few moments where this movie peaks.
Sure, it is. It's a nice sentiment, but it's just bad.
It's
awful.
the obvious nod to Mallrats, but before we get there, the whole David Arquette daydream promo off against the convenience store clerk.
Terrible promos. Yeah, they're straight out of like 1978. Like, these are just terrible promos that are like the worst stereotypical wrestling promos of all time.
I feel like I would have enjoyed that scene a lot more if I was, say, 10 or 11 years old.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know about you guys, but I'm not really like, I don't find a man sticking his finger up his own ass and then having another man smell it to be that funny. Yeah.
Well, get ready for the next 90 minutes here, Blake, because you're getting nothing but that.
I'm aware. I watched the movie.
Okay, my initial thought to that whole dream sequence is, why is this the only use of Macho Man Randy Savage? Why is that the only part of the movie they could get him for?
I
imagine Macho Man.
A better foil?
Macho Man had the wherewithal to just get in and out of this like god awful movie.
My one gripe with that scene was that when they were fighting in the convenience store and the floor had fucking give.
Yes,
you could see the floor.
The floor has to bounce.
Yeah, you could see the bump. You could see. Like, yeah, you could see the ring.
You have to look at this from like a. This movie was made in '99, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I guess it's just so hard to like not notice that stuff, considering how far CGI has like has come nowadays, right? Oh. But yeah, I thought that was funny.
Right, like
They did hide it slightly better in the next scene when they were like wrestling outside. Like, they had, like, the dirt and everything. Although, there was one where they did the suplex and the dirt just poofed up into the air because of that. And...
although, it was... overall, in the whole movie, it was nice to see how many suplexes happened in that movie. Because it's more than most matches these days.
Yes. And also, that was my trademark Canyon counter number one in that scene. Where you could clearly see Chris Canyon's face when he did the double axe handle.
Wow.
So that was Canyon counter number one for me.
There's a really subtle line right when David Arquette's like cop dad pulls up and like is harassing them, and is like trying to make fun of him and is telling him that he has trouble getting his little wee wee out to pee, and he just like under his breath, if you don't catch it, is like, it's not that I have trouble, I just I just don't see the point. And it's little, that's the best comedy, is the stuff like that that gets totally missed. And I feel like that is exactly how Blake would respond in that situation.
And also, we are maybe 10 minutes into this movie, and we've already had David Arquette sticking his finger up his butt, and then we've had the cops cop a feel on David Arquette's friend. Yeah. This is turning into a pornography very quick.
It was fucking weird.
Oh, yeah. and then I started another counter, because I know Crowder started his canyon counter. At this point, I started a dirtbag counter, because this comes up really often in the movie. And I know this is meant to be an insult, but his dad says wrestling is for dirtbags and lily pickers. And I spent about 20 minutes scouring the internet to try to figure out if there was any meaning behind the insult lily picker. And there isn't. It's literally just a string of two words that the scriptwriters put together that probably sounded like it was like homophobic, because a lot of this movie is homophobic.
Very much so. This is a very homoerotic movie here. And also, this was directed by the same person that did actual good movie Hardball. Like, I don't know...
Really?
Yes, this was made by the same person that did Hardball. It was also made by the same person. That person also made Norbit, so I don't know where this ranks in his hierarchy of directorial career.
This person's quality is all over the place, is what you're saying.
Yes. I feel like this is almost like when, like, John Hughes was near the end of his career and just started, like, smoking crack and writing Home Alone 3.
What?
He needed something to do.
Yeah. Anyways, where are we now? We're next at the,
To me, I think we're at the WCW show.
Oh, before that, there was the scene where, he was trying to... Yes, where David Arquette was trying to suction the ass out of his best friend. He was trying to murder his best friend, basically.
No, Crowder, Jules, would you guys do that to each other?
Definitely.
No!
Oh, yeah, I would.
I'm not going in near a public toilet with you.
that's the problem here.
I would do that to any one of you, because I think it's hilarious.
And how
if you do that to me, I'll kill you. You'll never catch me in a porta potty. That's just disgusting.
You're not a fan. You're not a porta potty person there, Ty.
Dude, the shit is sitting right there. Why the fuck would I? No.
Well, what if you're like out in the boonies and that's like your only option?
I'll hold it and get constipated, but I'm not fucking.
I'll only use a porta potty if it's like, if desperate times call for desperate measures.
All right, we went off the rails there. All right, let's get back to the.
I stopped making notes until we got to the WCW show. That's when I started.
Were we ever on the rail?
No. And so
not
how
this one? No.
How old do we think these characters are?
Early 20s?
Seems like 20s.
20s.
They act like they're fucking 12.
11?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're from Wyoming, right?
They
judge that
just a product of their upbringing.
They are the people that you meet playing Fortnite. Like, like when they're going through the drive-through and they're like talking to that girl that like Arquette's friend has the crush on, and fucking Arquette's just being a goddamn idiot.
Truck full of fucking human feces. That's the way to go.
Poop jokes, right?
Yeah.
Was that all I had to do?
Yeah, that Blake
bring a woman a truckload of shit.
And
you know, at least they got the romance factor in there, you know.
That's right. Very, very heartwarming. And also, you have to give her cheese, Blake, as you read in your book.
Yeah.
God damn it. What book was that?
I don't remember, but you posted that in the group chat.
Yeah.
But that scene also had my favorite line in the entire movie, where David Arquette's like, would two losers have tickets to Monday Nitro?
Yes.
Yes. Very self-aware. The movie should be over.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, if this is like 97, then I guess it's passable, but
yeah.
Are we going to ignore the fact that they were just eating their food while there was literally the drizzling shits going on around them?
Yes, shit just was dripping. Dripping down.
God. I was like, as soon as I saw that scene, I'm like, I just know I'm going to hate the rest of this fucking movie.
Hey,
you it's a wrestling movie, though. Yeah.
What did you just say?
Who, me?
No, Jules. He like just stuttered and just froze on me when he was trying to make one.
Yeah, no, Blake just at that point just did not even give it a chance.
Yeah, I did. I watched the whole thing.
Wow, that's amazing. I don't even know how you did that.
Yeah, I watched the whole thing.
You know when you're counting down the minutes? You know when you're like doing like burpees or some shit?
Yeah.
You're counting down the set. That was me watching this movie.
Yeah, I was about 20 minutes into the movie, and then I'm like checking. It's like, how much time's left in this movie? Oh my God. There's still 70 minutes left.
See, but the barrel parts were when they were actually at like the WCW shows. Like those scenes I found somewhat bearable because at least it looked somewhat normal.
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
Before we get to the WCW show, was anybody else uncomfortable with how gun happy this cop family is? Especially
That scene would not age well in the year 2020.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
No.
Like, these cops are just whipping out their guns like it's their cocks, like, to like, anybody that walks in front of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was pretty bad.
Yes. Yeah,
if this movie came out last year, it would just, oh my God. Everyone would get crucified.
What about those Nitro girls, right?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, that is
WCW.
That is another product of the early
2000s.
And 2020 and Raw Underground, but
I guess the Raw Underground strippers.
Never, of course, the Nitro girls had to have their own plot line.
Never forget the Raw Underground strippers.
Find one.
So now we're at the best part of the movie. The
Unmastering Mysterio?
Yes. Oh, that was another fun fact. That was another fun fact about that scene. Rey Mysterio fucked up his knee real bad in that scene.
Really?
Yes, because they made him do the pop-up Hurricane Rana about 100 times because they had to get it, because it's a movie. So they have to get it from every angle. So he had to do that pop-up Hurricane Rana about 100 times in that day.
Well, you're bound to get injured at least one time doing it that many times.
Yeah, yeah. So he ended up fucking up his knee, and that was the last. I think he was out for like 6 months on WCW
after
at that
the
time.
Movie.
Yeah.
Oh gosh.
Oh, but it's too bad because he didn't get the win.
Yeah.
The filthy animals.
That's right. What a
team. That would also explain why we don't see him in the rest of the movie after that.
Yeah.
As weird as it is to see Mean Gene as a ring announcer, it makes me miss him real friggin' bad. Like, just hearing him all over this movie.
Yeah. I don't know. My favorite part of that scene was, like, the fucking... the Booker. Just like, shady fucking, like... 90s, early 2000s wrestling bullshit.
You know, just this Titus Sinclair is not a product of 1999. Pulled straight out of 1983.
If someone told me that that scene was based off a true story, I'd believe it.
Yeah.
Oh, before we get out to the ring, too, and this is a moment where it's like, if you're not off the train, you'll definitely be off the train here, because... right when Sinclair tells DDP that he's going over for shoot, after he walks away, DDP looks directly into the camera.
And just
destroys the fourth wall. Just like looks right at you at home like.
Also on that scene, there was a close-up on Goldberg, which makes it seem like he's going to be in the movie more than, like, one more scene in the entire movie. Like, that scene made it look like he had an actual role to play in this movie. But nope, he's not seen again for another hour.
Yeah, no, he's left out.
Goldberg's presence at the end, though, is kind of important.
Yeah, Goldberg isn't seen for until, like, the two marks are talking to him at the gym when John Cena's in the background.
Yeah, Goldberg is in three scenes.
The prototype is in the background.
Yeah, Goldberg is in three scenes, and his first scene makes it seem like he's an important character in this movie, which I would probably prefer rather than fucking everything else in this movie, if it was focused on, like, Goldberg kind of being the hero and not and not fucking homeless knacker Jimmy
Oliver
King.
Platt?
Yeah.
I will admit this. The movie does everything in its power to make Oliver Platt feel like a real wrestler.
He looks terrible. how is this guy your main eventer,
the main protagonist in the movie?
how is this trailer trash redneck the main character in this movie? He does not look like a main eventer in 1999.
I mean, no, I main evented in 2019.
Yeah, in front of, like, 180 people?
And the house was still empty, Blake.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't.
Can
we fast forward to when they were actually wrestling him and DDP in the ring?
Yeah.
Or they're just calling spots. Just fuck the business, right?
Call, I know DDP likes to have his matches, like, called out in advance, but if you call Hammerlock off the tie-up, then that's fucked up.
Yeah, like, why are you calling Chain?
Yeah, like, why are the world champions calling Chain?
Yeah, like, that seems a little... there's a whole bunch of stuff at the beginning of this movie that it makes me miss. I really like the brief time that we got Tony Schiavone and Mike Tenay as an announce team. And that I really love them throughout the whole movie being the announce team, and the goddamn big gold belt. Like, I love that belt.
That was clearly a replica.
Yeah.
Like, at least it was, put some effort but like, in.
I just missed the belt, man.
Okay.
That's all.
Is there anything else to discuss from that scene?
DDP goes into business for himself.
Yeah, how that is like half shoot, half work. How like he starts shooting on DDP or he starts shooting on Jimmy King and then starts trying to work for the Diamond Cutter.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what are you doing? Or even before that, like, okay, so Jimmy King, first, I don't even know, like, I guess because he's WWE property at this point, but I feel like Jerry the King Lawler would have some beef in this film. But aside from that, so the cheese of the Jimmy King gimmick is like the right level of cheese. I mean, it's a little, you should have gone a little further back in time, but like, I don't hate the gimmick.
I do.
Why was he rapping?
What about
a King gimmick?
How can you not hate the gimmick? He is a rapping king.
He's a gangster king.
I forgot about the rap. I think I'm
How could you forget? Rap. It takes you so out of the moment. It's like, what the fuck is this? And why?
I think I forgot about it. I think my brain chose to suppress that memory.
We also learn really early on in that moment that he has with Sinclair that there is no reason in this movie at any point to cheer for the journey of Jimmy King. He is an asshole and should obviously be the lead villain of this film. But then again, with all the overbooking, I still don't understand how Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo were not the main villains of this film.
Yes.
But now we know. But they should have been.
Can we also talk about Jimmy King's weird ass random stable? Because it appeared to be it appeared to be his stable appeared to be Jimmy King, Conan, Perry Saturn, and Mr. Perfect.
Was Sid Vicious there too?
No, Sid Vicious was later on in the movie when after because Saturn turned on him in the
yeah, he's one of the heels, right? Yeah. Yeah.
And all of those guys, and Jimmy King is the leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Isn't Kidman part of it too?
I think he came in later, but like when Jimmy King was coming out to the ring, he was with Conan, yeah. Saturn, and Mr. Perfect.
Oh yeah, at the start, his first match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so
this
movie has no NWO presence whatsoever.
And I mean, I don't that's know probably if good.
A win or a loss for the film, but
I mean, it's good for that the NWO. Being said,
this yeah.
needed more Kevin Nash.
Yes. Also,
here's the thing. Do you really think the NWO would do the job for Jimmy King?
Because I don't. Hell no. Hell no.
No, but it would make it way more entertaining.
Also,
DDP was a heel. He was like one of the most beloved baby faces of WCW. And this is his second worst heel turn because I still argue that stalking the Undertaker's wife was worse.
Yeah. Like, I have to assume, like, this was, like, written for, like, Scott Steiner or something like that.
Yeah. Why? This movie could have benefited from Scott Steiner.
Yeah. Also, Jimmy King is a fucking idiot. Titus told him at the beginning of the match he was going to fuck him.
Yep.
He did. Yeah.
And then is surprised.
Yeah, then he was shocked that he was fucked.
Well, you had that ego, you know, you had the fucking crowd cheering for him and shit.
Yeah. He had him in the palm of his hand when he started ripping off Run DMC.
Yeah. But it was good, right?
It's just for some reason, I don't know, every time I, like, when I watch that scene of them just fighting, I'm like, it just doesn't look believable that, like, Jimmy King would get that many shots on fucking DDP.
Yeah.
No.
Like the shoot.
Not if it was a shoot.
The shoot looked more like a work than the work.
Yeah.
Once we go forward from this, my biggest takeaway from the whole thing of David Arquette's family being a family of cops, the only reason that exists is to give him a cop gimmick at the end of the movie.
Yes.
It serves no other fucking purpose throughout the whole film.
So what do we think? Is that segment a shoot or a work? Because they were shooting when they were fucking them, but then they were doing heel turn angles and working towards like spots in the match.
I think it was just everybody going into business for themselves at the same time.
But then working with each other.
Yeah.
Because they have to make the shoot scenes look more believable. Like they can't be running spots at that point. Like he just has to ground and pound. Yeah.
Oh Jesus!
Oh, this film was beautiful.
No, it wasn't.
I do feel that somebody needs to steal the Four Post Massacre, though.
Yes, please.
Please. Especially the two people doing the diving headbutts to their other person's feet.
To their feet? Yeah. We tried a Four Post Massacre once. It didn't end like that.
Did we all kind of like just bonk in the middle or?
No, we all got nutted on the top rope.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, the CWC show. Yeah,
I was there.
Yeah, you were McGriff.
That was McGriff. Three out of four of us were there.
Yeah, Jesus.
I was dressed up as a cat.
That was my Kyle O'Reilly cell to intentionally pop TY.
Yeah, and then TY had the Mickey Mouse ears and
yeah.
I'll never do that shit again.
I'd do cats me on a heartbeat. For the two scenes that she is in this movie, Caroline Ray is super underappreciated.
Sure, I hope she got paid well for being in this fucking movie.
I hope so too, because like she brings it to the two scenes that she's in, and like I appreciate her level of commitment to what is clearly not going to be the best movie ever.
Yeah, because Aunt Helga from Sabrina is way above like slumming in this movie.
So that begins the filler.
The movie falls off a fucking cliff at this point.
Yeah,
like, it didn't fall off a cliff already.
No, at least
this is where it really just takes a dive.
Just fucking nothing happens in the next 20 minutes. They're whining and bitching, and they're on like they're with farting nuns.
Okay. Everything. I have a note about this because everything about the nun bit, the hitchhiking nuns, is great until they ruin it with a fart joke at the end. Because they just couldn't help themselves. Yeah. It's actually mildly entertaining. It could be funny. And then they just, they get out of the van and it's the fart joke. And it's just like, you had something there for like, for a second. You had something and you just had to insert David Arquette's finger into his ass again, didn't you? Like it just, that's what most of this movie is. And this is no slag on David Arquette because I love him. But this movie was basically his finger in his ass for 90 minutes.
Yes.
this movie was just ass for 90 minutes.
Hey, can we at least be happy we had a wrestling movie made with actual wrestlers and like
that's
a
Hollywood.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it wasn't until like 10 years later with The Wrestler that like
that's
an actual
true. That's the best, yeah.
That an actual good wrestling movie existed, but
hey.
You didn't appreciate
also,
Rusev with a gun?
That was R2.
This movie was also the reason that David Arquette was WCW champion.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That was a bad idea.
Poor David Arquette, man. He got so much shit for that.
That wasn't even his call.
It's not even his call, yeah.
And David Arquette was a fucking good guy. He didn't cash any of his paychecks. David Arquette donated his entire paychecks to the families of Owen Hart and Brian Pillman.
Nice.
That's good.
I didn't know that.
I've heard in interviews and in different stories and books, it was not his call. He didn't want to do it. He was against it. He was against them putting the belt on him.
It was Russo.
It was Russo being like, it's ratings, bro. It's ratings. Yeah. Like, no, it isn't, you fucking idiot.
I like that wasn't what got him fired, but the suggestion of putting the world title on Tank Abbott got him fired.
Can we all acknowledge the fact also that David Arquette is fucking amazing for working matches?
Oh, like, that's awesome. Yes. Yeah.
Like, I really want to follow
the RJ City stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whether we review it or not, I really want to watch the David Arquette like wrestling documentary on Netflix after this.
Yeah, I want to
think of watching that too.
Yeah, that looks like an actually good thing that David Arquette was attached to.
That Jimmy King video game looks like something I could program while having a seizure.
Also, holy shit, they run into Sister Abigail. When they got to the trailer to find Jimmy King, they found Sister Abigail.
I get it. Yeah. That reminds me, sorry. I was watching with little Leo, right? And he asked me, you know how they like found him on the internet? And Leo's like, can they find people that easy?
It's like, yep.
And he's got his critical thinking hat on. That's good.
And this is probably before Blake and TY's time, but we have the Shermanator. You guys remember the Shermanator?
Yes. Yeah, I had a note on that. It's like, holy
the
shit.
Shermanator.
Holy shit, the Shermanator. His career
he
died.
A lot, guys.
Yeah,
he's a huge part of this.
Yeah, he was the hacker here.
Like he was,
it is so simple.
Mustafa Ali long before Mustafa Ali. However, I'm surprised that Shermanator's dad is a scumbag, but he doesn't like wrestling. I'm confused. I thought wrestling was for scumbags.
I'm a scumbag and I like wrestling.
I haven't seen a lily picker yet in this film so far. Yeah.
Maybe he just like really loves lilies and he doesn't like when people pick them.
Okay, sure. So there are two other things from this like bedroom hacking scene that are my takeaway other than Terminator's dad being terrible. Is first of all, there's one thing that's legitimately funny, and then there's one thing that I think they thought was funny but really wasn't, which is when David Arquette, I know they have names, Gordy, I think it is playing with the Jimmy King and Diamond Dallas Page action figures, they're not wrestling. Like, Jimmy King is literally raping Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad the 6-year-old.
He has him bent over, and he's, like, ramming him into him. And, like, doing sound effects, and it's like, what, is that... That's supposed to be funny, right? Like, what...
It's supposed to be something.
And the only thing saving that is his friend in the background 30 seconds later singing to Baby One More Time as if nobody else is around him.
This movie was clearly directed towards a much younger audience.
A younger 2000s audience, yeah.
Which is why this movie lost about $14 million.
And yeah, at the same year.
Yeah, this movie was catered towards young, stupid WCW only fans.
Yeah,
there weren't any in 2000.
Can we get to the part now where they get to his fucking wife's trailer and she has crabs?
Oh my god! Okay, that line. This is another one of like David Arquette has brilliant lines in this movie that are like very quiet, and it's when he's with when they're at the door with the wife and she's like, "Yeah, you ever have crabs? You ever seen crabs up close? You wanna?" And like David Arquette like gets wide-eyed and really really excited, and then like is like, "Fantastic," and like his friend has to hold him back, and it's like, why wasn't there more of that?
Why wasn't there more crabs?
Crab talk?
No, just like the subtle delivery of the comedy.
Jules, is this a fetish of yours that we don't know about?
So far from what we understand, Jules's two favorite parts about this movie are jokes about crabs and David Arquette not being able to whip his dick out at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's all in the delivery.
That's his two favorite parts of the movie so far.
Yeah. Oh, shit, you have to give Blake a timeout.
I can't. I'm sorry, Cloud.
What? Don't time me out.
Mute his mic. Mute his mic.
I can't.
I'm a part of this podcast.
No, fuck you. Mute his mic.
I'm not even being a shitlord here. Don't fucking mute me.
I'll mute him if he starts praising this movie.
You don't have to worry about that.
Okay. The next big build from this scene with his wife is the kid angle. The build up is not worth the payoff.
No. I can't believe how this fucking kid showed up at the very end of the movie. Like it's some sort of major achievement. Like
this whole movie wasn't worth the payoff. Like,
like what the fuck? Like, I'll get to that when we get to it. But there was no point to this scene at all.
No.
The kid had fucked teeth as well, so that part
we didn't find out about the fucked teeth until the second time he comes until Jimmy King comes back. That's when we find out about the like really find out about the buck.
So, you know what's funny too? Like at this point, like they know that Jimmy King is a fucking asshole. He comes late to shows. He's a deadbeat dad, and they're still fans of him.
Yeah, he's somehow still the hero of this piece.
Because these two...
That's wrestling.
Because these two fucking idiots are the biggest marks in the fucking world.
Oh, yeah.
It's like...
Todd is a teaser.
Did they not think for one second that maybe there's a good reason why this promoter decided to shoot on him?
No.
Like this didn't happen for no reason.
Right?
You gotta King with the thickest redneck accent I've ever heard in my fucking life.
Yeah. You gotta pick little golden nuggets sprinkled here and there. Just like okay, so next they corner his parents, right? And my takeaway from this, because it's just BS filler, because why the hell, if they told him that Jimmy King stole their camper, why didn't they report the camper stolen? But when they're standing at the door of his parents and they are arguing with his parents over what the shit in his autobiography says, is every ignorant wrestling stan on Twitter.
I did enjoy that, where he's like, after you died in a plane crash, I did enjoy that line. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah.
That was good shit.
That scene is the internet wrestling community in a nutshell for the most part.
Yeah, and it still happens, like people on Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And Twitter.
Yes.
Especially God, Twitter. Fucking Twitter. Fuck Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah, if I didn't say it loud enough, fuck Twitter.
Yeah, this website fucking sucks. But you can follow us on Twitter at dadbodsquad_pod.
And then they find drunk Jimmy King in a dress and in the stolen camper.
Yeah.
That has not been reported stolen.
Yeah, they found Sister Abigail.
Now, my question from that is, because that whole scene is also just another boatload of filler. But from an indie wrestling standpoint, him allowing them / convincing them to buy his beer for him, is that offensive or accurate?
That is the most accurate part of this fucking movie. That is the most real part of this movie. Jimmy King being a fucking carny.
Exactly. Yeah, right.
You know, it's a sponsor drink, you know?
Yeah. Yes, that is the most realistic part of this movie so far.
Right.
I love how he kicked them out multiple times and just did, nope. Fuck they're you. Just, they're I'm just too big right marks. Here.
Right? It's just like if Spoople ever found out where Blake lives, it's just like, get out. No.
Game over, yeah.
No.
Some Blake mom yelling downstairs.
I'll buy your beer.
I don't drink beer.
So
I don't drink alcohol.
So I have to bring up a point to see what everybody else's take on this is. I made a note. Does indie wrestling not exist in this universe? Even if Sinclair owns Jimmy King's rights, and there is also no WWE in this universe, he could at least make money doing conventions and indie shows as former WCW World Champion and the biggest draw in pro wrestling.
Oh yeah, like, for sure.
Yeah, like Jimmy, what is Jimmy King whining about? He could probably live in his trailer in peace, doing conventions.
Right, and even if WCW is the be all end all, and somebody else owns the right to his gimmick. Like, repackaging in wrestling happens all the time. Like, why just not come back, try to break back in with a different gimmick? I mean, even Hulk Hogan was Mr. America. Like, there's a slight logic error. Well, this whole movie is a slight logic error, but...
My theory in this movie is this is all a work. There is no shoot. Jimmy King is just really... really addicted to keeping kayfabe.
He just won't give up kayfabe at all.
Yeah, he is completely invested into protecting this fucking angle here. Why else would they be working spots and doing heel turns in the big shoot?
Right. This whole movie too. The soundtrack is every 2000s teen comedy.
Oh my god, yes.
And I'm like, I got halfway through and I keep listening to the soundtrack and my first thought is, who the fuck did they make this movie for?
Nobody. That's why it lost $14 million.
Like pick a target audience and stick with it.
There is no audience that will like this movie. Like, wrestling fans will hate it. Like, people over the age of 10 will hate it. There is nothing for nobody in this movie. It'd be like watching my matches on repeat. Like, nobody would watch it.
Yeah.
Oh no, we lost
TY. Oh, we lost TY.
TY's like, fuck this fucking movie.
Well, he lasted that long.
Yeah.
Almost an hour.
That's pretty solid.
All right.
Every time I see Bam Bigelow in this movie, I just feel bad for him.
Every time you see who? Well, you kind of cut out for a second.
Bam Bam Bigelow.
Bam Bam Bigelow, yeah.
You see him briefly in the beginning, and then you see him here when they're, breaking and entering into the arena, which is surprisingly easy.
Yes, WCW security is shit.
Yeah.
They had Ralphus.
Yeah, where's Ralphus to save the day here?
Yeah. Also, there's, an incredibly inappropriate stalker level of Sean and Gordy watching the Nitro girls change, which is just them walking around in their underwear. And nobody stops it. Nobody says anything about it, except for when Rose McGowan comes out and it's no big deal, just because they need to begin this romance subplot.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a Stranger Danger going on there.
A little bit, yeah. I feel like somebody gets bounced out of there for that.
Yeah.
Also, I'm going to say it later, but I'm saying it right now that obvious double cross is obvious.
Yes. And can we talk about, like, how David Arquette always gets, like, hot women?
Courtney Cox in real life?
Yeah, David Arquette gets Rose McGowan in this movie and Courtney Cox in real life. That is a testament to shoot your shot, everybody.
you don't know.
Yeah. All right, we're getting TY back in here.
Yeah, I have to say, Titus Sinclair, a.k.a. not Eric Bischoff, implying that DDP is somehow worse than Jimmy King is completely offensive.
Yeah, and it's very passive. He's very passive-aggressive towards DDP in this movie.
Yeah,
like he.
Sorry, I'm back. I tried to quit, but I felt bad.
Okay, I didn't
get out.
I don't blame you.
We thought you were gone for good now.
Yeah. No.
Sorry.
I thought it's like yeah, I'm going. Oh, you send a text like, oh, sorry, internet problems, sorry, guys.
It. Yeah, no, he's super like dismissive of DDP, but like, he's not wrong. I might disagree with his methods, but everything that Sinclair is doing. Is like, I don't disagree with him. He's punishing Jimmy King for like being a piece of shit, and then like is reminding everybody that like he's an alcoholic and like is doing nothing with his life, and like, oh, okay, what, how are you the bad guy again?
Yeah,
you're getting screwed over by this alcoholic like asshole who can't bother to show up.
Yeah, unreliable.
Yeah,
like,
but they still managed to paint him as the bad guy.
Yeah, like, Jimmy King is incredibly unlikable for the entire movie. Like, I don't feel at any point he's, like, redeems himself. Like, there's the scene in the hospital, but I feel like that is only in passing. Like, I don't believe that he has changed at all by that point.
Was there ever a point in the film or in real life that the WCW World Championship was defended under 24/7 rules?
Yes.
I was just about to bring that up, and I do not recall.
Yeah, that was very, very progressive for WCW to basically invent the 24/7/hardcore title.
Yep.
With their world title?
Yeah, with their most prestigious title. The title that, like, Ric Flair and Harley Race hold is now defended in the backstage by by the porta-potties.
Yeah.
And,
like, I don't... I think Crowder's theory about this all being a work is right, because during this shoot backstage brawl, the cameras are still rolling... Gordy is allowed to tackle somebody, which, by the way, I'm going to steal David's Arquette yelling a foreign object every time he sees one, just as loud as humanly possible. But like, they never get charged. They become part of this promo that Sinclair cuts. Yeah. Like, Crowder's right. It has to be a work from start to finish. It's the only way it makes sense.
Especially back then, like if the fans tried to like, they beat the shit out of them.
Yeah.
Like, every wrestler involved would be like kicking the fuck out of them, right? Like,
right?
Well, and like a bunch of wrestlers from the back would intervene and join them.
Yeah.
And
not Sinclair in a submission hold. Like.
Yeah. Oh, can we point out how smooth like Gordy's slide into that head scissors was?
Yeah. Right. Like just so just, pro.
Yeah.
I think my favorite part about that is. We get the first early glimpse of just of how much Disco Inferno is going to use whatever platform he can to get as much as possible.
He kind of just slides like right into camera view.
Yeah, he slides into the frame and stays there the whole time.
Wearing his stupid fucking hat. Also, sidebar. Canyon's
nothing to anything.
Sidebar, Canyon Sighting, we're at 4 Canyon Sightings now.
Oh, we're at 4 now?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because the fight, right?
Yeah.
I also love that for no reason, okay, I understand Sinclair wanting to punish him. I understand booking the match because you're in the heat of the moment, and like as a booker, you're trying to react to the situation. The fucking cash prize adds nothing to the plot, nothing to the stakes, until another 20 minutes from now.
Yes.
Like, why? What? Like, just to make it seem like a bigger deal. Like, it They added that out of order.
I needed that money to fix his son's teeth.
Yeah, but like we hadn't established that yet. So like,
the way I understand that is that like he got fired probably maybe like 2 days before that. Did he? So why is he broke already?
Yeah.
That he needs the $1 million that quick. Yeah. Right. That doesn't make sense, right?
Or the DDP promo all before this were like, he says that Jimmy King couldn't tell a wrist lock from a wrist watch, which is like the oldest promo stereotype. But like, what they mentioned just before that he was like undefeated for 14 years. He was shown chain wrestling with DDP. He's not Goldberg. Like, I'm assuming,
but then they wrestle. But then they flip flop that, because when he shows up at fucking Stu Hart's house.
Stu Hart. Blue
Pheasant. Yeah. It's fucking established that he is, in fact, a really shit wrestler.
Yeah, like, he's just terrible. So it's like, what is it?
Another reason.
How is he champion for so fucking long?
Yeah, he is hobo-looking Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah.
He is Ultimate Warrior without the personality, charm, charisma, or anything. Build, yeah. Physique. Yeah. If Ultimate Warrior was a shitty guy you found on the street, it'd be Jimmy King.
It'd be Jimmy King. So, and then we move on to our next filler, which is there's the party.
That's another fucking 15 minutes of nothing.
Of nothing. There's two. I have two takeaways from the party. The first one is, you could not telegraph Rose McGowan's betrayal even more if she was wearing a giant neon sign that said plot device. Like, it is so painfully obvious at this point.
I can tell.
That being said, the best thing about this party is drunk Mean Gene dancing and then asking Jimmy King if people think he's sexy, and then Jimmy King being like, yeah, I think you're sexy, definitely. Yep. Like, it's, this movie needed more drunk Mean Gene.
What are the odds that that was not scripted at all?
God, I will say this, if there's one thing in this movie that made me pop, it was like, this girl showing David Arquette her tits, and his first reaction was to punch her in the face.
But we're not there yet.
He
fell in the gutter, remember?
That is.
I feel like I've suppressed the memories of a lot of this shitty movie in my brain.
I am going to challenge everybody to something, though, because this was so bad that I feel like we can do better. When they pick up Jimmy King, because I guess he ran off into the sewers of all things, because they had to be able to find him easily. So since they're sewage workers, logic dictates, fuck logic, let's throw it out the window, he was in the sewer.
They're sewage workers. They're not fucking detectives.
I know, like, right?
Like, how do they figure out
the capacity of 12-year-olds at this point?
Their job is literally sticking a vacuum inside a porta potty. How the fuck did how do they find him?
Because the movie needed to move me and it wasn't over yet. But when they find him, the fan-written Jimmy King song that they sing for him, I feel like we could do better, and I would challenge everyone here to just, I think each one of us could write a better song for our favorite wrestler than these two idiots come up with for Jimmy King.
I will not ever fucking do that, ever. Fuck your challenge.
Someone's got to rise to the occasion here.
I forgot about that part of the movie, too, like, probably for good reason.
Yeah. Okay, so... Oh, yeah, what are my next two notes? Oh, yeah, the obvious Stu Hart Luthez character.
Yes, Sal Mandini.
Yeah, Sal Mandini. Yeah, that scene is just watching Oliver Platt get beat up by an old man. It's great.
Sure.
I needed more of that.
Yeah, like, I did enjoy how it was literally just Stu Hart.
Oh, yeah, it was. And then we cut to more filler, which is the date. And Buenos Nachos is my new greeting.
Are you fluent?
Yeah, right? The bananas instead of flowers because the flower shop was out of flowers, I feel like is a Blake move. Yeah. In fact, this whole bedroom's like seduction scene, I feel like is straight out of Blake's playbook.
Yeah, this is basically a
porn object when she takes her top off and punching her in the face.
Yeah, okay, first off, if a woman took her top off in front of me, I wouldn't resort to violence.
Yeah, this movie turned into a Blake Cannon biopic here. So
literally,
this whole scene made me miss the nuns.
Oh,
also, that wasn't a snapmare. That was more like a judo throw hip toss than it was a snapmare. He never grabbed her by the head.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like,
if he's calling his own spots, call him right.
Like, fucking unrealistic piece of shit movie. Like, blah, blah, blah.
He's the one who said it was a snapmare when he took her down.
Yeah, like, he's supposed to be one of the baby faces in this movie, and yet he's beating up this woman.
It's okay. It's about to be justified because in like 10 minutes from now, she's gonna betray him.
Yeah, that's right.
In the most obvious double cross ever.
Yeah, like what the fuck is that?
Okay, David Arquette kind of deserved it at that point.
Yeah, right. Like David Arquette didn't know. He's just beating her for no reason at this point.
It's really if you look at this objectionably after watching it, you're like, wow, our lead character is like. With maybe the exception of Sean, two out of our three male leads are just idiots and terrible.
Yeah.
And it's hard to justify any of these things happening to them as being bad.
Yeah, so far we have David Arquette, noted misogynist. We have Jimmy King, unreliable drunk. And so the only person in this movie is David Arquette's friend, but he hasn't had any screen time to really fuck anything up yet. So
no, we have no real fucking up, no real fleshing out of his character. Yeah. In fact, he flip flops between being the one to try to give it up when they meet Sister Abigail in the trailer, but then like 10 minutes later is like the glue holding them together.
Yeah. Yeah. So
No consistency.
Yeah, he is the only one that's somewhat likable in this movie, but that's only because he has fucking no lines.
Yeah, right?
He's like, if he had lines, I'm sure they would give him something to fuck up in this movie.
Fucking up, yeah.
And then we get to the gym, and we see a young blonde John Cena. We see the prototype.
A young John Cena with the Ajax haircut.
Yeah. Pumping iron, not even paying attention to the camera, just working out. And then
Goldberg's back after 50 minutes.
Yeah, after finally, it's been an hour, we get Goldberg again. And listening to all of his lines, this is still the second best Goldberg performance in a movie after Santa's Sleigh.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how Goldberg has shown the most charisma in this movie than I've ever seen in any of his matches?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you can relate to him all of a sudden, right? Like,
this goes back to where, at the beginning, I wanted more Goldberg. Yeah. Like, Goldberg is the only, like, good character in this movie where he is still kind of stiff, like he is kind of still helping Jimmy King, even though he knows that Jimmy King is a fucking asshole, but because like he doesn't like Sinclair, or he hates Sinclair more. But yeah, I want more Goldberg. I can't believe that I'm saying it, but I want more Goldberg. That's the only time.
We're not talking about the Royal Rumble this year.
Yeah, only time in my fucking life I will say I want more Goldberg.
He's right here, right now.
Yeah.
Leading away from this. When he sends Saturn and Sid to try to like fuck up Sal,
I want a Saturn Sid movie where they're just fucking bumbling goons.
This is the best thing I've ever seen Sid do, and the second best thing I've ever seen Saturn do behind Moppy.
Yeah,
I was very entertained with Saturn and Sid as the goons.
Right, Sid, that should have been the sequel. If they were doing a sequel, that should have been it.
Yeah, Sid is the perfect dumb goon.
Yeah.
Like, he is the Ajax of this movie.
What did Ajax do to deserve to be compared to this fucking idiot?
Exist.
Leave Ajax alone. I'm kidding. I love our boy Ajax alone.
Oh, I just used a government name. I love you, Ajax.
somebody call the burn unit real quick there. Check for Ajax.
Government name.
We need to get Ajax on this podcast still.
Yes.
Yeah, we sure do. So the hospital, obvious double cross is still obvious. It has no payoff other than him walking away from her. It was pointless. It was completely pointless. In the waiting room, Jimmy King's Dixie cup, his disposable Dixie cup, has a tiny little handle. Why and where the fuck can I get these Dixie cups?
So I was basically mentally checked out by this point in the movie. what
that long?
What was the point of the double cross?
It didn't have a point.
Like, and what
it
was
didn't have a payoff.
What was Titus's plan there?
To get information, I think. Yeah, it was for her to kind of be like his lookout.
So like what kind of information did she get that these guys are training. Fucking
they're training with Sal.
Yeah, I think that was the point. Is she led the goon squad.
I feel like this was
to Sal.
I feel like this was more like Titus just really fucking hates Sal and wanted his address. Like, it had nothing to do with Jimmy King. Like, he just wanted to beat the shit out of Sal.
Well, he did promise her that she was going to be the lead WCW girl.
Wasn't she already, like, in that scene at the beginning
Which
of the
makes
movie?
Makes no sense.
She was front
was the
and
center. Head of the squad.
Yeah, she was already front and center.
Yeah, so what difference was it going to make?
Yeah, like, what was in it for Rose here? Or whatever her character's name was.
There's a quote when they visit Sal that I have questions about. And I wrote it down because I didn't want to forget it. Because when they first meet him, he tells them, "My balls are in my throat, my prostate is the size of a melon, and I'm crapping tapioca." What the hell did Saturn and Sid do to him off screen?
Well, you know, when you get old like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The dad bods would know all about
that.
That
implies that happened as a result of the assault.
They might have left that unanswered for a reason.
Yeah. I still feel like if we had flashed back to that, it still would have been better filler than the filler we've got and the filler that's to come.
I don't know, like, is how comfortable would you be of a deleted scene of Perry Saturn of Perry Saturn and Sid Vicious just relentlessly beating the shit out of an old man for 10 minutes?
That would be amazing.
It would be hilarious because if they were still bumbling idiots.
But at that point, they were relentless. Like, they had cracked a chair over his fucking head.
But in the hospital scene, they're sitting there, when they flash to Sinclair on the phone, the two of them are more beat up than they were by the end of that scene, like, licking their wounds.
I
feel like there was a bigger fight to be had there. We could have had some more cinematic fun.
Yes.
Wait, I'm sure they hit him in the back with the chair, right? I don't think it was the head.
I thought they got him, like, in the back, in the neck, upper back kind of thing.
Oh. That was
just crazy to
shot.
Think, like, he's a crazy old son of a bitch who's, like, clearly very athletic and very agile, but that one chair shot fucking killed
just
him.
Just did him,
just
yeah.
Killed
him.
Yeah. It's like refs being made of glass. Like, that's it.
Yeah, like we definitely could have had more cinematic fun, which we all know PJC loved himself a good cinematic match.
Woo.
Me too. The next transition involves the first time in this movie, and not the only, that we hear Kid Rock, and I'm confused because this is not a WWE production.
Now, you're skipping the most obvious product placement of all time. Where David Arquette just
about Butterfinger,
yeah, David Arquette he just straight up stood up. It's like, I want to get him a Butterfinger, and then just walked off. Like, that is the most obvious product placement of all time.
Like, and then the follow up where Jimmy King looks like he's gonna say something relevant and is like,
Can I get a Butterfinger too?
Yeah, that scene was brought to you by Butterfinger.
The only way that could have been more obvious is if they brought Bart Simpson in.
Yes. But then after that, it's another 15 minutes of fucking nothing that goes nowhere.
Yep.
Is that when he started doing the recruitment for his goons?
Oh, yeah.
I gotta say.
Oh, wait, first he goes back home because now we need to make the prize money relevant. Oh, he has to discover his son's fucked up teeth. Oh, perfect. And then before the recruiting, they have to pick up and reinvent the cop storyline for no reason other than to have Gordy come in as a cop at the end.
Yeah.
And we get another homophobe moment when he picks him up because he's like, what? No skimpy outfits, no touching other men? We're like,
damn, dude.
Yeah. This whole movie's a homophobe.
To see how far we've come. Yes. In 20 years.
No, we don't talk about that.
Now we're proud of our homo erotica, so.
Yeah, we just own it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we own our.
Yeah, like part of us. You, what do you two call yourselves again? We're the life partners?
Yeah, me and Jules are the hetero life partners here, so.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah.
That
JJ's barn, face is just like, what the fuck?
Welcome back. This is what you missed. The tryouts in the barn.
I gotta say. The barn thing, we've all taken bumps, right? That ring would be amazing to be in, right? In
that barn. Oh, yeah. It looks like so beautiful. It's like, okay, I'll bump in that.
Yeah, the softest ring of all time.
Yeah, like they were doing some moves with people. That's all I thought about. I was like, man, I would love to bounce and take some bumps in that barn ring.
Do you remember the one ring that we did have? That it was like basically like the mats were gym mats, that it was impossible to run the ropes on that because the mats were so soft.
And you would just sink in every time.
Yeah, you'd just sink in anytime you tried to run the ropes. Like, it kind of reminded me of that a little bit.
It was like bumping on a pillow.
Wonderful. Like, it was nice to
talk about how like all the people he was recruiting were probably like better wrestlers than Jimmy King ever was.
It was like oh, Jules, are you still there?
I was waiting for you.
Yeah, okay, good. I was going to say, that is very, I think it's meta commentary where the champion is not always the best wrestler. Usually the best wrestlers are the ones that are unsigned in the indies. I feel that was very meta commentary of the movie. I'm just kidding. It was all bullshit and nobody, that was not intentional at all.
That whole scene was like the tryout scene from Mystery Men, but way worse.
And when you say it's like Mystery Men, but way worse, you know that you're in trouble.
I mean, there was no Waffler, so I mean...
I'm going to almost like... Blake, you have not seen Mystery Men, have you?
No.
TY, you have not seen Mystery Men, have you?
These kids haven't seen anything.
Yeah.
Ben Stiller, man. Sorry.
Yeah, I believe that's another product of the late 90s, early 2000s.
Oh, definitely.
Like,
I'm also sure it's aged well.
Oh, absolutely.
This as shit as this movie is, I want to fucking hear about it.
Also, when we're leaving the training, Sean's only plot point, which is the love interest swap, is also painfully obvious. There's no subtlety to that at all. Like, we all knew it was coming.
Yes.
Like,
from the first scene, where you knew that they were going to end up, like, hooking up with the nice one and not the one that's like, you guys are fucking idiots.
But instead of building that one, which was logical, made sense, and Sean was the more likable character, we decided to go with Gordy's whole subplot with the obvious double cross that had no payoff. There were some poor choices made in the filming of this. Also, the next scene is the worst use of Sting ever.
Him in the dark interrogation room?
Yeah, just like, and the only thing that I'm thankful for is that it wasn't Wolfpack Sting.
That might have made it better. Just this lobster looking man sitting in an interrogation room.
Oh, wait. Because as bad as this is, once we get to the triple cage match, there's something worse with Sting, but I'm not there yet.
Wait, here's my question. Sinclair's talking to Sting like they have some prior relationship that they have not developed at all.
No. Right? It's
literally the first fucking time we see Sting.
It's just like, poof, here's Sting.
You better not fucking do anything to help him. I'm like, what? They're friends?
What is Sting's stake in this? At least Goldberg has established what?
This should have been Goldberg in this scene.
It should have been Goldberg, yeah.
They just wanted the Sting star power in there.
Yeah. And fucking Jimmy King changing in the bathroom was amazing. Yeah.
I want Sean's manager suit.
Can I say, literally every gimmick that this movie invented, Jimmy King, Sean the Pimp, Cop Arquette, Titus Sinclair, are straight out of bad indie fucking wrestling promotions. Yeah. It is a massive indie promotion gimmick here. Yeah.
It's almost as if I know a promotion that would book them all.
Exactly. Like, these are all the worst gimmicks in wrestling history.
Yeah.
Oh God. Okay, so are we on to the actual match now?
This is where it gets okay, because like I would watch this match. I love that they drag Michael Buffer to ring announces, even though it's been Mean Gene the whole time.
Yeah, just
to, like,
brought him out of nowhere.
Yeah, I will admit that I did enjoy the idea of a cage on top of a cage on top of another cage.
Yes, I wrote that in my,
was kind of cool.
I did write in my notes. It
becomes like almost like a ladder match as well. Yeah. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I did write in my notes that this would be a match that would be, I wouldn't mind like bringing back kind of thing.
I'm sure WCW did it a couple times, right?
Yeah.
Well, they did it once for sure. How many times did they do it?
I think they did it at least twice.
I remember the canyon spot.
Yeah, which was the most tasteless spot in wrestling history. Does anybody know the story behind that spot?
I'm pretty sure I know about it.
That spot was done where they throw Canyon off the cage and took the pig bump. That was filmed in Kansas City, Missouri, the same arena that Owen Hart died in. That was the same arena Owen Hart died in. They did the spot where they threw Canyon off the triple cage.
Ten points, guys. That being said, maybe don't do that spot, but bring back the triple cage.
Yeah, why not?
War Games. I want to see this triple cage again. Could you imagine what like Ricochet could do in a triple cage?
Yeah. Oh, also, that's where they bring it back. It was originally a match from the early 90s where it was Hogan and Randy Savage against the Dungeon of Doom. It was in the Doomsday Cage. So that was at least the second one.
This match is so overbooked that I go back to the fact that Eric Bischoff and Vince Russo should have been the villains or all of TNA's booking in the mid-2000s.
This fucking match is what Vince Russo jacks off to every night.
he just turns on Ready to Rumble and he's just good to right to the end.
He doesn't watch porn.
This is the good shit.
Bro, this is amazing.
Yeah, Vince Russo doesn't watch porn. He watches the fucking triple cage match from Ready to Rumble. Fuck.
I love that when we get up to the second cage, nobody learned their lesson from Big Boss Man versus Undertaker Hell in a Cell at WrestleMania. And we're going to try to hang Jimmy King.
I do. You skipped the only actual good joke in this movie. Where is it Sean or Gordy?
It's Sean on the outside. Sean.
Yeah, where he powders DDP. Yep. It's like that shit doesn't work, and then he handcuffs him. It's like diamond upside down is a pussy.
Okay, we wait almost like we're like 80 minutes into this movie
for the first joke.
Yeah, for the first good joke, and Crowder and Spade can attest to the fact that even if you were like the mildest wrestling fan, that line was fucking iconic to the point that it was repeated daily at school for like 2 years.
We would have been like, what, 13, 14 years old.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, all the time. You'd hear it all the fucking time. Yeah. What else?
Then we had Jimmy King's son doing a run-in with the worst clothesline in wrestling history.
And a run-in that made no point.
Like, yeah, I really hope that Mike Tenay pointed out to the audience who the fuck this guy is, because the only people in this movie who knows who this is Jimmy King, Sean, and Gordy. There is literally nobody else who knows who this fucking kid is.
I would imagine that Sinclair, who booked him, probably knows who he is. Stretch.
Wait, correct me. This is after he fucking drove a motorcycle through the cage, right?
Yes.
This is before.
Or no, I think this is before, yeah.
How the fuck did he get in then?
He was like...
Because they let all the bad guys in.
Yeah, he was part of like the heel entourage, yeah.
And then Goldberg couldn't get in, and then again...
Motorbike. Well,
yeah, the whole... This is every storyline paying off in the worst way. Because the whole cop thing is just to have him ride in on a motorcycle dressed as a cop. That's all it does. It does nothing else.
They needed to open the cage somehow.
Yeah, right? Like, that's it.
Like, scientific sense at all.
No.
A motorcycle through a fuck, and it just opens.
And yeah. I want to see what happens in real life where David Arquette's like, and then blah, blah, blah.
Just dies right there in the spot.
Oh, that's the first non-payoff. And then the sun reveal is the other non payoff in the cage. God, there's so much. But we get Sting, and at least they played his theme song.
Yes, was that the only actual WCW theme song? Because like DDP had some like generic knockoff.
It was like some video game thing for DDP.
Yeah,
yeah, but they actually gave us Sting's theme in the movie.
Yeah.
And they weren't playing it as like an over theme like he was entering. It was part of the score of the movie.
Yeah. Which would work because like that's basically what Sting's theme song was. It was basically like a score.
Right? But then we get Sting meeting Gordy and Sean, and I think they're at the bottom of the cage talking, where he's like, and Jimmy King's all right by me. And then like Sean being the most semi-intelligent character in this whole thing is like, you know what, this is awesome, and it's okay to love, man, and you know what, I love you, man. And then Sting punches him in the face. Okay. So this whole movie is a homophobe.
I do enjoy homophobic Sting. It is given what we know about how hyper Catholic he is, it might be the most realistic part of the movie.
Okay, I was just going to say, you know, Gordy's reaction where he's like, do me. That's every Mark's reaction. Like, if we met Randy Orton or something, we'd like, RKO me, please, you know?
Wait. Yes. Let's show of hands. Who has had a Mark ask them to chop them?
Oh.
Yeah.
It is.
That's family.
Yeah.
You need to chop them.
Yeah. So there we go.
I will say, my very first day I met Massive Damage, I asked him to chop me, which I regret, but my first day meeting him, I was like, oh, can you chop me?
It's that mark out moment. He totally has that. That's authentic. DDP, for taking a fall that was equivalent to Mick Foley's fall off of Hell in a Cell, looks surprisingly okay.
Yeah, like DDP should be dead from that bump there.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure Mick Foley just carried almost died from that bump, did he not?
Also, like, how did that's another one where it doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, how is he plummeting through all of them at the exact same speed?
Yeah, without any drag, without hitting any of the kids.
After the motorcycle shit, fucking science makes no sense to me.
Yeah,
so I don't give a shit. They can start flying.
It's almost as if nothing about this movie is realistic.
Yeah, that's not true. Because now as we get to the end of the film, we get to the tag team announcement, and they bring together this whole wrestling family that is, you know, Jimmy King and Gordy, the Law, whatever they're calling him, and Pimp Sean as a big unit. You know, they fought back against the system that tried to suppress them. They fought back against the 1% that was going to keep them down, that was going to push them into the ground as hard as they possibly could. And they rose to the top, and they did it. So my biggest lesson from this movie is that we have to fight the Illuminati. We can't let them run this world. We have to...
a whole fucking minute just to build up to that bullshit.
Yeah, we spent an hour and a half, and that's the fucking punchline to the.
Here's what I want to bring up. No, shut up, Blake. So
okay. Shut the fuck up.
So after all of this, right? They asked Jimmy Goldberg.
Yeah.
Fucking Goldberg comes up to Jimmy King.
In his and says, Goldberg hey, in his prime.
Do you want to be my partner? He's like, fuck that.
I got this fucking guy.
I got this Mark over Goldberg in his prime.
This Mark in a fucking police fucking that's the guy.
Yeah, this fucking untrained Mark here.
way better partner than Goldberg.
Also, why was Mean Gene talking about unifying the heavyweight title with the tag titles?
What the fuck was that? How do you do that?
Yeah, shouldn't Mean Gene should point this out to the fucking person writing the script, saying this makes no fucking sense. But no,
I feel like at this point they just didn't fucking care.
I mean, yeah, at this point,
Mean Gene winning the tag titles by himself, maybe.
Here we're making a movie, guys.
At this point, Mean Gene,
you guys just wanted to get paid and get the fuck out. They didn't give a shit.
Now there are two cover songs in this movie, and like Biff Naked's cover song at the end of like Twisted Sisters, "We're Not Gonna Take It," really good.
Sure.
I really need to punch in the face whoever did the "We Will Rock You" cover, which I didn't bother to look up because I was so mad at how bad it was.
Fucking terrible.
Yeah, like it's just
literally one of the worst covers of all time.
It physically made me sick. But did you guys stick around for the outtakes?
Yes, I.
The best, when
Oliver Platt was shooting on Randy Savage.
Yes, when Oliver Platt shoot punches Macho Man.
I saw that one.
That is
yeah.
the best part of the movie, and they left it out.
Yeah.
And the only thing you don't get in the outtake is Macho Man's reaction.
Maybe that's why he didn't stick around.
But, like, Oliver Platt being like, "Oh shit."
Yeah.
He said, "Fuck this shit. I'm not doing this."
Oh, fucking Christ. Okay. Are we done now?
And that was ready.
Are we done talking about this shitty movie?
And that was Ready to Rumble. And what was everybody's thoughts on that? Blake, what was your thoughts?
On a scale of 1
to 10 rating.
Yeah. What was your thoughts on Ready to Rumble, Blake?
3 out of 10.
All right. TY, what was your thoughts on Ready to Rumble?
So I would probably have to give this movie -5 stars. It is horrible.
Spade?
Wait, Spade? So -5 stars. So are we... So this building would be like the opposite of the Tokyo Dome.
Yes.
What's the anti-Tokyo Dome?
I don't know, Alberta Ave?
Damn.
Fuck Alberta.
Continue.
All right. Oh, that's amazing.
All right. Spade, your thoughts on Ready to Rumble?
I don't know. I'd give it like a 4 out of 10, but like you got to see who they're gearing towards. Wrestling fans, you know, will love it, but also pick out the flaws, right?
Yeah.
Like, if this is just not a wrestling fan and you just sit down and watch it, they're probably going to think it's the most ridiculous thing in the world, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay, it's so here's my honest opinion. I think the story was decent.
The execution is
the basic redemption
terrible.
Story, you know, the guy who got screwed, but they just did everything wrong.
Yes.
Like, the guy who got screwed is a piece of shit. He deserves to get screwed, right? They built nothing up, right? The fucking the effects were horrible. I know it was like the early late 90s, early 2000s, but like you don't have to do crazy stuff like that because it makes it look fucking horrible. Go for it. It's just a shit movie.
I was just going to say, we're supposed to back this protagonist who's a shitty coworker, who's a shitty father, a shitty husband, and all this stuff. And really hasn't shown much we're supposed to support, right? So,
yeah.
All of his coworkers, his colleagues talk shit about him. He's late and drunk in matches. And
yeah, Jimmy King's family is probably the most ba-wa-da-ba-da-bang-a-dang-diggy-diggy horseshit I've ever seen in my life.
Can I just point out that we right now just got the best joke Blake is ever going to tell on this podcast.
Yes, clip that.
Clip that.
Yeah. Somebody clip that for us, please, because he's not gonna. He peaked. Like that. Yeah. That's it.
Thank you. I stole it from a meme.
Oh, very good.
Still worth it. Still worth it.
So, that movie fucking sucked. I watched it. I have it on DVD, and I watched it like in 2001, and I didn't mind it. Then I realized that 14-year-old me is a fucking idiot.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I guess there's movies that age well, and there's movies that don't age well. That's
this did not, no.
Age well, yeah. Well, here's my thing. I think for a lot of marks, I think that movie was something that, like, because nowadays, like, you have all these documentaries that go, like, behind the scenes and stuff and, like, show stuff that happened. So, like, we have an excess. But I think back then, I don't think there was that much, right, where you could see the business from behind the curtain, right?
Not really, yeah. There was Wrestling with Shadows was really the only one, the Bret Hart documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess that's why maybe fans were into it, because they could actually see shit
behind the scenes, right? And Beyond the Mat was also out at that time, too.
Oh, yeah, Beyond the Mat was, like, a big deal at the time, right?
Yeah.
Are we done talking about this piece of shit movie?
Yeah,
one more question. Wait.
Okay.
Would this have done better, and we would have liked it, if there was a WWE version of it, right?
Okay.
Looking at this, this was made in 1999, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it came out in 2000,
Looking at WWE's roster and knowing what we know about this movie, where they kind of picked a semi-main eventer as the bad guy. Like, at the time, he was mostly main event, but, like, not consistently. They would move DDP wherever they needed to.
And it would be a baby face, like an upper card baby face to be the main event heel.
An upper card baby face as a heel, and a big star, and not really give him a role, but have him there as filler.
The Rock.
Who would be the DDP of this?
Could you imagine, like, if this was a totally thing, and this was The Rock's breakthrough into Hollywood, being with the Goldberg role in this movie?
Yeah, Rock is Goldberg.
Let's see, who would be the upper mid card babyface? I don't know. I have to go back to their roster.
Like, what, Undertaker? No.
Yeah, I was nice thinking, like, I was going to Undertaker, because he wasn't always in the main event.
Wasn't main event all the time, right?
Yeah.
But at the time, wasn't he a heel? So it happened to be like a babyface.
Yeah, that would be, like, corporate. Tag team
Brother Destruction days, too, a little bit, wasn't it?
I think that was, like, just pre-Brothers of Destruction. I think he was, like, teaming with Big Show at the time. Like, it was right before, like,
Ministry of Darkness.
Yeah, it was right after Ministry of Darkness, right before Biker Taker.
Thank God I have the internet. Let's see what the roster was like in 1999.
Headbanger Mosh.
Yes. Headbanger Mosh. It's got to be upper, what are we looking at? Upper mid-card babyface at the time, right?
Yeah, like Ice, who was like the IC champion at that time?
Well, Jericho would have just debuted, or Kurt Angle.
Kurt Angle would be perfect for that.
Angle.
Maybe Angle, yeah.
Yeah.
Angle was probably a heel at the time.
But I don't care. That'd be perfect.
Right? Owen Hart.
Ugh, yeah.
What are we looking at here? Christian? Nah, Christian.
Edge?
No, Edge, yeah. Edge or Christian, for sure.
One of the Hardy boys?
Yeah, there were options. Oh, yeah, you could have gotten one of the Hardys, for sure. Joey Abs. Ken Shamrock.
Nice. Shamrock, yeah. Okay, so I think we can.
Mick Foley.
See, that's a tough era. Remember, Harry Saturn and the Radicals? They would have, like, just jumped ship around that time too. Hey.
Yeah, I was surprised they didn't reshoot the scenes with Saturn, considering how he had.
Say, he was still in the movie too.
Yeah.
Right.
I remember reading too. The Hurricane, Gregory Helms. He did stunt work for David Arquette.
Yeah, he was David Arquette's stunt double. Yeah. Which in the Triple Cage match. They basically just stopped trying to hide the stunt doubles, and there were multiple scenes where you could clearly see Canyon and Shane Helms' face.
Shane Helms,
this is just it. Where it's meta commentary. It's within. It's like trying to be beyond the mat while also trying to be an entertaining movie, which it fails at being both.
Yeah. In the end, just fucking watch Beyond the Mat.
Yeah. Have you, Blake, T.Y., have you guys seen that at all?
I think I remember watching it, but it was also a while ago, so.
Was it that one where they had
Bret Hart stuff behind the scenes?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That was Wrestling with Shadows.
Yeah. Oh, right, right.
Yeah. Beyond the Mat was the one with
Jake the Snake, wasn't it? Jake the Snake?
Yeah, that was with Jake the Snake and draws the he's gonna puke. Yeah. He's gonna puke.
That's all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right, so yeah. Fuck that movie, and this is the last time we'll ever fucking talk about
it. Yeah, that movie sucked. Don't watch it unless you're fucking drunk and want to talk about it with your friends. Don't sit down and watch it by yourself.
I'm gonna bring it up forever. Jupiter, if you're still watching or listening, feel free to let these guys have it because I know you like this movie.
Yeah, I'm sorry that we're like shitting on like a movie that you might like for like an hour and a half.
Hey, Jupiter Vision, this movie was worse than Ketchup Chips.
Ooh, shots fired.
Yeah,
you're still ducking him at Rocket League. We were ready to go.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, you were supposed to play Jupiter Vision at Rocket League.
Yeah, you faved him.
I never agreed to that.
That Blake would say that.
I never agreed to that.
Say that.
You want to put him over, huh? You fucking stubborn indie wrestling carny piece of shit.
I'm wondering where you're going.
I never agreed to that.
What's our runtime?
We're at an hour and a half. We should probably consider getting to our main event segments here.
I think we can skip. If you guys are interested in skipping
FMK,
every episode from now on, we skip that.
You know what? No, you know what? No. If Val's still here, it's her favorite segment, so I can't let the fans down.
Ah, boo.
Boo.
So this isn't even going to be, you know what? You know what? We're going to FMK the trio that's formed at the end of this movie.
Oh, very, very good.
Kill them all, man.
Yeah. Kill Gordy, kill Sean, Gordy. Kill Jimmy King.
Kill all of them.
Yeah. It's one. You get one.
Nope. I'm killing all three of them.
Oh, so we have to have one person take the week off for the poll because we can't do five people poll.
Who wants to, before we move on to the FMK, who wants to bow out of the chance to dethrone me?
I'll bow out because I'm, you know, the least around, I think.
None of you vets are willing to give the OG the shot.
Dude, I'll bow out of this whole podcast. I'm trying to tell you this for fucking days. You ever fucking let me.
You tried to quit in the middle of it. You couldn't.
I tried. But I felt guilty. Okay. I was like, let me finish the episode.
All right, so we have TY bowing out. For informational purposes, what would your hot take have been?
I don't have one, so I guess that kind of
very good. It all works out.
Yeah, it works out. Yeah.
Are you guys fabing my FMK here? Because I feel like you guys are trying to fabe it hard.
I mean, I'm gonna kill.
Yeah, kill as well.
You get one.
Last time I checked, I make the rules on this podcast, and I say I'm going to kill all of them.
I'll honor Jules' request because I'm not doing the hot takes. I'll go for this one.
Okay.
I will.
Oh, fuck. Thank you. Thank you for being a team player, TY.
Yeah. Well, because you're not all dead, so I'm actually willing to do it.
Next week, they'll all be dead.
And that's when I bow out. So, I think I would fuck Arquette because because then we just end up wrestling. That'd be fun, right?
that's
the way I look at it.
But then it turns into a match, right?
Yeah, exactly. I would marry Arquette's friend because, you know, he's clearly the more stable one, and I'd fucking kill the shit out of Jimmy fucking King. That deadbeat piece of shit. So there you go.
Yeah, like,
I'll kill all three of them the same way Dwight would kill Toby, Bin Laden, and Hitler in The Office.
That was Michael.
Yeah.
That wasn't Dwight.
So you screwed it up.
No, it was Dwight, was it not?
Just mute him.
I'm pretty sure it was Michael that wanted to, because no, it was a
no,
thing.
No, Michael.
Where he was gonna shoot Toby twice or something.
Yeah, and then Dwight brought up the idea of killing all of them with just one bullet.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Okay. But yeah, like
terrible.
I can't put my penis inside of either of them, any of them, So I can't fuck any of them. I can't stand any of them to live my entire life with all of any of them. So I have to kill all of them. They all have to die.
Commit triple homicide there?
Yes, I will.
Nice.
I will freely admit it.
Terrible.
All right, Spade, you're up.
Yeah, you haven't been a part of this segment yet. It wasn't born yet when you were still here, so...
I haven't. I was kind of like a little puzzled.
He's kind of like, what is this shit here?
Yeah.
You're welcome. Thanks for coming back.
We'll put together, JJ.
You guys are cheating a little bit. You have to play by the rules, right? You can't just say kill them all.
Oh, I guess. Yeah,
thanks,
okay.
Thanks for being a baby face on this podcast.
Oh, whatever. It's my life. I'm killing King because he's a deadbeat. You don't want to marry him, you know? That's right. Sorry, so I gotta kill the king.
Yeah.
And then
I hope your wife is watching you from like around the corner.
Oh, right, she's listening and
just disappointed to what you're doing on your fucking Sunday night.
Yeah. Some people's life choices here.
So fuck and marry, huh?
Yeah.
Let's go. I'm gonna fuck that Scott Cann character. What's his name in the movie? I forget his name already.
I think it was Sean.
Oh, yeah, Sean the Pimp, right?
David Arquette was Gordy.
He seems like a good guy. You know, the way he's talking to Sting about loving other men and it's okay to love men, you know? He seems like a good, genuine guy, right?
Sure. There we go. I guess that's fair.
And then David Arquette, I guess I marry him.
I guess.
I guess. That's just leftover.
You want a police officer in your life?
Yours, right?
I guess he's got some security there. He's got some weapons, right? You know? I don't know. I'm just trying to play the game.
All right. So, it's an easy no-brainer on the Mary. It's Sean. He is the closest thing to a decent human being, right? He gets the in at the end. He tries to keep it reasonable, and like Spade said, he's like, you know, it's okay to love other men. Like, he's sending the right message. He gave us the iconic "a diamond upside down is a pussy." Like, he is the glue that holds this all together.
He is the best character in this movie.
Oh yes, yes.
Like, it's definitely. It's a very low bar, but
it's not hard to be. Yeah, it's not hard to reach.
I think I gotta kill King. It's tough. I was gonna kill Gordy for a second there, but like, no. I'll F him because it's either gonna be hilarious or terrible or a combination of both. And like TY said, it'll eventually just turn into a match.
Yeah, I mean, like,
because I'm pretty sure
foreign objects.
I'm pretty sure I could take 2000s David Arquette in a match. Arquette now, different story. But
he's a beast now.
Yeah,
I want to take someone 20 years older.
I could take WCW champion David Arquette.
Is he taking light bulbs to the head now and shit?
Yeah, he wrestled Nick Gage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And then, Jimmy King is just like a despicable human being and somehow the main character of this movie and presented as a babyface. BS.
So Jimmy King has to be the worst protagonist of all time, right?
Absolutely. One of the worst.
He's up there.
Yeah.
He's up there, yeah.
If we were to do a Mount Rushmore of terrible protagonists, he's on it.
Maybe
for sure.
He'd be fucking Ben Franklin right there.
Okay, moving on to hot takes now.
All right, so
we finally finished talking about this movie.
Thank God.
For the last time.
Yes.
Since Blake is so adamant about doing this, okay, I like Jupiter's opinion. Jimmy King isn't technically a protag, but he's the bumbling sidekick.
Sure.
Yeah.
Then who's the pro tag?
But I feel like
he's a shorty.
I guess it'd be
the pro tag. That's okay.
I guess technically it would be Gordy, but he has no real character arc. He's just a mark the entire movie, and then he's a mark signed by WCW at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
His arc was turning down the pro tag.
Yeah.
It's not that it's unbelievable. I mean, WCW in 2000, they had signed anybody. So.
Stay afloat.
Yeah.
Okay, so since Blake is so eager to get to this,
I kind of just want to go to bed.
What two moronic things have you pulled out of your ass, much like David Arquette's finger in this film, and slapped together to somehow make what you call a hot take?
I haven't done that this week. My hot take for this week is fuck TikTok. Fuck TikTok.
Oh shit.
He's throwing shade this week.
All right.
That's
tough. So what's your beef with tickety tockety?
I see way too much fucking cringe and horse shit coming out of TikTok for me to be bothered to go anywhere near this stupid fucking app.
So
straight up, you know, I think like the only good thing I've seen come out of TikTok is Gordon Ramsay fucking roasting people's cooking.
See, in this
watching Gordon Ramsay's like slowly lose his mind.
I think it depends on who's making it. I think like at the end of the day, it's just a platform, right? But yeah. It depends on who's making the videos. So if you're going on the weird side of the fucking TikTok wave, then you're the fucking.
But why are they all fucking cringe though? Huh? Why are they all fucking cringe?
Because you're watching the cringe ones.
Yeah, like this.
That's all that ever comes out of TikTok, though.
I'm not a fan of TikTok. I don't have the app, but I'm just saying it's a platform.
So I feel Blake is officially a boomer now, where the new thing that's popular with the kids he hates. It's just like.
He just added 20 years in this segment.
Back in my day, we had Instagram. Oh,
yeah.
This is also continuing to prove my theory that he is the antithesis of the thickness, because thickness is pro TikTok. Yeah. He has grown his audience vastly because of it, and he was happy to tell me about it. And like, this is how you do it. Like, this is how I've exploded just over nothing.
Yeah, thickness.
So just continue to be the antithesis of the thickness, Reed Matthews.
Yeah,
thickness. Motion to replace Blake Cannon with thickness. Everybody say aye.
Aye. No.
Motion passes.
Thickness, the invitation has been extended.
Yeah.
Can we be replaced. Hey, poll daddy, can we do two polls this week? One for hot takes and one if we should replace Blake
Cannon. But we have to have a disclaimer, not a binding poll, because we can't, like, force Reed Matthews to sit in here.
We can't force Reed Matthews to do it. That's our reason.
Yeah.
He's like, fuck, I didn't sign up for this shit. I'm not fucking doing this.
Yeah, it's like, I want no part of this fucking shit. I have a brand.
All right. Who's gonna pass the buck there?
All right, Blake, who do you sign next here?
Let's throw it off to the champ who used his burner accounts to beat me last week.
No burn. You're the. You know, it's funny. You're the first person to say that. So
hey, you accuse me of using burner accounts.
Dealt it.
No, you accuse me of using burner accounts first.
Whoever smelt it, dealt it. So thank you for admitting to the world that you use burner accounts to get your idiot opinion.
You use it. You did it first on Twitter a couple days ago.
No.
Yeah, I can find proof.
It's like I disagree.
You mean you're gonna track polls where we can't actually see who voted for what?
Yeah, there's no transparency here.
Where all my votes came from.
Yeah,
I'm going to find proof that you did.
That being
this.
Said, there's no proof.
There is.
Because I don't have the only accounts I have are mine.
Yeah, right now Blake.
I don't have the time to. I don't have the time or patience to manage more than one. That being said, while you're busy being a moron, I'm going to just slide on over here and tell you guys that this is a fact, and I'm going to continue to tell you guys the truth. There is one GOAT musician, and it's Weird Al Yankovic.
Okay.
Who?
Get the fuck off this podcast.
Okay. I'm trying to Google this to see what this fucking boomer you're talking about.
Oh, you're actually serious?
Yeah, I know.
He has been relevant for nearly his entire career. He's been relevant for, like, what, 4 decades now?
Yeah, like, UHF was in the, like, 88 or so. I think UHF was late 70s.
80s. I'm pretty sure it was, like, tail end of the 70s.
No, I thought it was, I thought UHF was, like...
I thought it was early 90s.
But UHF was not where he started, though.
No, but like, it was his first big thing, but I'm pretty sure, like...
That was his first big thing.
I'm pretty sure it was, like, 88, 89 was, like...
He's become so relevant that in interviews even to this day, like, mainstream artists consider it a rite of passage in the music industry to be parodied by Weird Al. Like, it is an achievement. It's a you-know-you've-made-it moment when he chooses that. He can adapt to any style of music he's parodying. He doesn't change... he changes the lyrics, but unless he's doing his polkas, he doesn't change the song. He doesn't.
He's a white and nerdy guy, right?
Yeah.
Okay, now I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, he doesn't take the tracks and just come over them. He has a band that completely recreates the song. So it's more of a cover with changing the lyrics than it is just recording himself over a track, with which, you know, any idiot can do. He is a constant presence in the music industry, and now the last full studio album finally was Billboard Top 10 because the world was ready to just accept his brilliance and be like, you know what, you guys are right, he'll be here forever. Forget Keith Richards, Weird Al will all be here. He's also timeless. The man doesn't age.
No, he's very R-Truth like with his appearance.
He's popping up everywhere. I mean, he pops up. He's relevant enough for things. Like, he popped up in Robot Chicken. I just recently watched him pop up in Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. That doesn't prove anything. That just says that I thought you were ranting that you were going to prove that I used burner accounts.
No. You said that whoever smelt it dealt it. You fired the first shot about me using burner accounts.
But that's not what you said you were going to prove. You said you were going to prove that I was using burner accounts.
All right, moving on.
I said I was going to prove that you accused me of using burner accounts first.
Weird Al is go.
You are the one using burner accounts.
Spade, I hope you're ready for this, because TY dropped out, so you got to give us something.
Yeah, I was hoping he wasn't going to drop out. I'm not really ready for it.
Yeah, throw a wrench in the fucking game.
I don't know, Crowder, can you take over a few minutes? Or?
Sure, I will. All right. A few weeks ago, I tried to get a cheap pop by saying that the Oilers are going to make the playoffs for my hot take. And that ended up just dying a death and didn't take off as well. So I'm going to fucking fuck the Oilers fans. And I will say that Grant Fuhr is the most overrated goalie in NHL history. He is no better than Chris Osgood. He was a good goalie that was on a amazing team, one of the best teams of all time. And then he went to St. Louis, it was basically Grant Fuhr going to St. Louis was Chris Osgood going to the New York Islanders. He never had the success when he left Edmonton. He was a product of playing for the Oilers, much like Chris Osgood was a product of playing for the Detroit Red Wings.
The only time Grant Fuhr was good was when he played for the Flames.
Ah, yes.
No, but for real though, I'd argue that almost every goaltender back then was overrated.
Sure.
Like, got something against goalies? Like, what's
no, like, just like, if you look at
is goalies, all of Shrek better than every NHL goaltender?
Yes.
You know, JG, if you want to win this, just take two absolutely different things of life and put them together as a hot take, and you'll win.
Yeah. Or you'll do surprisingly well in a world that doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yes.
I have no idea where to even go with this. The Crowder went the hockey route. I was thinking hockey, of course.
There you go. You can still go hockey.
Yep.
Yeah. How about jersey numbers? That's my favorite thing to debate.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, right now, jersey numbers is the hot thing. All right, what do you
jersey got? Jersey numbers in hockey? There are no rules for jersey numbers in hockey.
Okay? All right.
That's my thing.
All right,
That's my hot take. Because we have the Oilers goalie wearing number 19. And I don't know, I think it's stupid how people make articles in the journal about, oh, he shouldn't wear number 98 or a goalie shouldn't wear number 19. It's a number and who cares? I don't know.
Yeah,
only allowed to use two-digit numbers in the NHL, right? So, like, you're going to reuse the same number statistically.
You can use one-digit numbers. What are you talking about?
But it's a zero still. Like, either way, you're limited from, like, 1 to 99. You're eventually going to, like...
Yeah, 98. Yeah.
Oh, you won't. You're not even allowed to do 99.
Yeah, 99's retired league wide.
It was league wide.
Holy fucking.
One number's retired, but like you don't have to retire the whole fucking everything started with 9.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous. Like Jesse Puljujarvi wasn't allowed to wear 98 because it was too close to 99.
Like
how insane is that?
That's my hot take. Is jersey numbers have no rules to them? I guess.
Very good.
Josh Hosang was not allowed to wear number 66 because it was Mario Lemieux's number.
For a different franchise.
Yeah.
For a team you never played for.
Exactly.
You can't have 23 in hockey.
And not even that. Not even that. Mario Lemieux straight up said like he was fine with it. He didn't care.
Yeah. Player. I'm gonna guess that the players don't care. Like yeah.
Or if positions. What about a goalie? Can a goalie have free reign to wear whatever he wants?
Yeah,
I think so.
But yeah, like Koskinen's not wearing a traditional goalie number, and like who cares? Like, but some people do. Like, it's weird.
I've seen people like make petitions over this because they're like, "No, that's not a goalie number. Like, what is a goalie number?"
Yeah, it's just stupid gatekeeping bullshit.
Yeah. Yep. If you play hockey, you can't have 23 because that's Michael Jordan's. So
yeah,
you just can't. Yeah, so, yeah, retire the whole cross sport.
That's right.
And Blake's done.
Yeah. It's like Clay Fighter 63 and a third.
Blake has something he wants to show off. It's show and tell now.
I think we should turn him off.
Sam? Oh, yeah. You can't, Blake. No, that's Michael Jordan's number. You can't have
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, nobody deserved from MJ Sean Monahan, baby. That's right.
Yeah, nobody in hockey could wear 42 because that was Jackie Robinson's number.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, like that's it. Pole Daddy says poll is up, I suppose.
All right, good job, Pole Daddy.
So what are we doing next week? Are we back to our usual bullshit, or we did mention actually watching The Wrestler?
I don't want to watch the
wrestling any more shit.
I don't want to watch The Wrestler because it's a more serious movie, and I feel like it wouldn't be as fun to discuss non shitty movies.
I want to continue to do things that piss off TY.
We could consider watching bad WCW pay-per-views.
Oh, yeah, because we did. That was another idea we tossed around. Like we assign the podcast a pay-per-view to watch in its entirety.
Yeah.
If you really wanted to piss off TY, we'll just keep doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's already pissing me off. Yeah.
I mean, next week is probably going to be a Royal Rumble recap, though.
Oh, yeah, I guess.
Probably. Yeah.
But after that, we could.
Andrew suggests old Rumbles, so.
I mean, for next one, it should be old. We should go through like a couple WrestleManias in the lead up to WrestleMania.
I'd be down with that. Or maybe what's next month? Elimination Chamber? We can go through a couple of those, or like No Way Outs.
Yeah, sure. Well, we could discuss it. Not killing time on the podcast.
Nah, I just wanted a hook for next week. We got people with this one. There was like 15 people in your channel there.
I'm gonna say the hook for next week is probably the Royal Rumble quick.
Which, given what time I work until, I will be reacting to it live.
Oh, you'll be watching it while we're talking about it here, or
pretty much, yeah.
All right. So
we are 2 hours in.
Yeah. With that said, we should be wrapping up here.
Fucking long.
Yeah, that was the longest episode in a while.
Who's our Royal Rumble picks?
That's a good question. Yeah, let's do that. Daniel Bryan.
Cesaro.
Cesaro's good because they're heating up Cesaro right now.
Like, I'm picking Daniel Bryan too.
Or I kind of want Uso to win the Royal Rumble and then do a rehash of the Batista Triple H storyline.
That's not bad.
Where Roman will be pushing Uso to challenge Drew. But he ends up going against Roman.
Ooh. Stone Cold Steve Austin wins his fourth Rumble.
Exactly. No, play by the rules.
Goldberg's challenging for the Universal title. There are no fucking rules anymore. It's anarchy. Steve Austin comes back, wins his fourth Rumble.
Ready to Rumble alumni Bill Goldberg challenging.
I got to say, Alexa Bliss for the women's. Alexa Bliss for the Women's Rumble. Is she even in it?
I want to see Bianca Belair, I think.
Yeah, she's on a roll, actually, too.
Yeah, I'll agree with Alexa.
Yeah, I'll go with Bliss as well.
Because it kind of
Jazz. Jazz wins the Women's Royal Rumble.
Oh. Jules just wants this podcast to fucking end here.
We all do.
I think we all do. This is going
fucking... All right. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be back next week on behalf of Ricky Two Belts, JJ Spade, Blake Cannon, and T.Y. Jackson. We all bid you adieu. Have a good night, everybody.
Fuck you all.